Radio Darmstadt.
Mit dem Chaos Radio.
Radadadadada.
Schönen guten Abend. Hier ist das erste Guten Name nach aus Amerika. Dieser erste Teil der Sendung von Cerada wird euch heute präsentiert von WBAI Radio aus New York. Wir werden zuerst ein wenig Off the Hook übertragen. Wie ihr das kennt, sicherlich hören der eine oder andere von euch schon mal Off the Hook, ist Off the Hook natürlich auf Englisch. And therefore we will do all the show in English. We are having all the crew over here who usually do Off the Hook, and after we had Off the Hook, we had said this often enough now, we will have some tours of German radio where you can call in on 06151780010. Hope to hear you calling then and after Off the Hook. But now I first like to introduce all the people who do Off the Hook, as you are over there.
Hello, this is Emmanuel.
Good evening, this is Redbird.
I'm Mike.
Guten Abend, Darmstadt. It's Jim here, and that's about all the German I know.
Jim is the wise guy of the radio show.
Ja, und we will after that talk a bit about the American hacker scene, especially the New York hacker scene, a part of which I have now seen, and especially the upcoming American event, The Hope, I think all you want to say something about that?
The Great Hope Conference, yes. This is going to be our sixth Hope Conference, and that's why we named it Hope Number 6. We started in 1994, and every year we just kind of add new things, new features, new programs, new panels, and hopefully lots of new people. It's modeled a lot after the German conferences, the German and Dutch conferences, because when I went to Galactic Hacker Party in 89 and HEU in 93, everybody was telling me how something like this could never happen in the States. We could never have a big conference of hackers. And so in 1994, we decided to give it a shot in the middle of New York City, which is probably the least likely place you'd ever expect to succeed. And so we got the Hotel Pennsylvania right across the street from Penn Station, and somehow managed to get a whole bunch of people to show up and give a bunch of talks. And it was the biggest hacker conference in the States at that point. And we've been able to do it every between 2 and 3 years since. And now every even year we do a Hope Conference.
So we are proud to talk about that a bit. And I think now we first have a little Off the Hook Radio.
Dear listeners, this is Indra Hardat, Interim General Manager of WBAI. I would like to take this opportunity to thank our producers, our volunteers, and all of you who pledged for our recent winter fund drive. With your support, we were able to raise approximately $900,000. With your support, we can continue to provide the award-winning programs that are part of our history. It will also help us sustain our commitment to commercial-free community-sponsored radio that educates, informs, enlightens, activates, and sometimes even inspires. Thank you so very much for your continued support, and please honor your pledge. Thank you.
And it's just about 7 o'clock on this Wednesday evening, and that means Off the Hook time.
The telephone keeps ringing, so I ripped it off the wall. I cut myself while shaving, now I can't make a call. We couldn't get much worse, but if they could, they would. From Billy Bomb for the best, expect the worst.
And good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Hook. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Wednesday evening, where we take a look at the world of high technology and all the other fun things that are going on around us. With us tonight is Jim.
Bonsoir.
And Mike.
Hi there.
Redbird.
Good evening.
McFly joins us from Germany.
Hello.
And we also have Arseny.
Hi.
And Walter.
Hello.
Okay, great. We have another packed studio. And we don't have Bernie S. tonight because he is still feeling the Hungarian flu, believe it or not. That's a keeper, that. when you get sick over there, it's for a while. Okay, story of the day. Yes, if you can believe it, this particular song is in the news all over again. And it's because of events over in England. Some guy named Haraj Mann was playing this song in a taxi. Here's how it works over there. You basically are able to plug your MP3 player or whatever into the taxi, which is kind of cool, and then you can sort of sing along with the song that you want to sing along to. It's kind of cool. Now, this guy was singing along to this song as he was driving to the airport with a taxi driver, obviously, and apparently the lyrics that he was singing out loud were, London calling from the faraway towns, now war is declared and battle come down. London calling to the underworld, come out of the cupboard, you boys and girls. Apparently that didn't sit well with the taxi driver, who reported the passenger to the authorities. He was dragged off the airplane that he was on and questioned at length. He missed his flight. It's simply unbelievable. This story happened, the incident happened last week, last Wednesday. It's just hitting the media today. What do you guys think about this?
The first thing I want to know is what taxi driver would agree to have this installed in their taxi.
Apparently it's something big over there. That's an interesting little feature. But not really the issue here. The issue is how people are reacting to this increased security alert.
I have a message to taxi drivers, authorities, and others concerned, and that is that, like, sensible terrorists do not sing about their plans or destruction in the presence of people who are not already privy to them.
And also, they have this thing called security checks on the way into the airplane, too. And just because somebody is singing a song that you might not like doesn't mean that they're somehow going to thwart security in addition and do something bad. It's probably just your own paranoia. And the fact that the guy's name is Haraj Mann, obviously he was the wrong ethnic persuasion. His skin was a little too dark, perhaps. Who knows? Jim?
This reminds me of an incident that took place more than 30 years ago. One of the writers of the musical 1776 was polishing it up on an airplane flight, and somebody took umbrage to his trying to compose lyrics with democracy and freedom and tyranny.
How about just the fact that he was singing out loud in an airplane?
Well, he was like under his breath, if I recall the story correctly. And he was pulled over, and this was way before terrorism hit. So
I find that when I mutter under my breath on an airplane, people do tend to take an interest.
You're a little different from many of us. Mutter under your breath anywhere, and people take an interest.
You're welcome to give it a shot, you know, and see what people do. But I don't know. Let's listen to the offensive lyrics for a second.
I was there too, and you know what they said. Well, some of it was true. London calling at the top of the dial. And after all this, won't you give me a smile? London calling. I never felt so much alike.
Well, Mr. Mann is a mobile phone salesman of Indian origin. He missed his flight to Heathrow last Thursday because of the security check. And, sorry, our CD player is malfunctioning. And he missed his flight because of that and took a taxi back to Hartlepool. And he said he was questioned under the Terrorism Act.
Which is more or less, the Terrorism Act is more or less Britain's version of the USA Patriot Act.
Yeah.
Similar.
It's unbelievable, though, that this kind of thing happens, and it's considered not that unusual. I mean, people are jumping on the story now, but you just look a little bit suspicious. You look a little bit different, and all of a sudden, you're someone who needs to be questioned some more. But I want to know is who's the taxi driver? I think we should be reporting idiots. If you see an idiot, report that to some authority. Because this guy was responsible for all kinds of delays, all kinds of invasions of people's privacy, and I think that's a bigger threat to the system than some guy singing along to The Clash. But we don't get to find out that guy's name. He's protected for some reason. He can do stupid things like this.
There's a lot of idiots. It would be a very long list.
It would be a long list. That's true. But imagine if you were able to get them all in one place and just, you know, let them live in their particular continent and everybody else could get on with something else. McFly.
Well, if you go in the subway here in New York, you hear very often, if you see something, say something.
Yeah, but it doesn't mean if you see anything, say every, you know, well, these people are reporting the slightest little things.
Yeah, this is what I mean. Isn't this a kind of denial of service attack? Everybody just would.
Absolutely.
Well,
absolutely.
I think nearly everything, if we see this, nearly everything is suspicious. We just should say every time something and we'll get rid of this problem soon.
I mean, look, the guy reporting this was an idiot, obviously, but the authorities listening to him simply because some guy is singing to a song, that's enough to pull someone off an airplane?
This gives an opportunity for 2600 meetings. I mean, people have occasionally bemoaned the lack of culture at these meetings. We should form choruses and sing.
Let's not.
Various lyrics. I was thinking, this is good. Boomtown Rats, I don't like Mondays. Shoot it all down, you know, the lyrics.
Yeah, but we have the meetings on Fridays anyway, so.
I know, but what I'm saying is, you know, we could just be in places.
All right, we got it.
Yeah. You know, I was talking to some people about this online earlier. There are people who have never heard The Clash. It's music their parents listen to. I've never felt so out of touch before, but if you can believe that, this is music that their parents listen to. And how do you rebel against that? How do you rebel against The Clash, you know? I mean, when we were kids, what, it was our parents listened to what, Perry Como or Al Jolson? I don't even know.
Who are you asking? That's what I want to know.
Okay, but, you know, the weird thing is that music changes so quickly, and something that you think is revolutionary actually becomes the mainstream. This guy is singing along to a mainstream song, something that his parents or someone else's parents would be listening to.
You know, this leads into something about people reporting way too much. Walden Books and Borders, I suggest a boycott of them because of what they're about to do. They're barring a magazine called Free Inquiry. The April-May issue is coming out, and the reason that they're doing this ahead of the issue coming out is because they're publishing the cartoons of the Prophet Muhammad printed last year in a Danish newspaper. They're doing this way ahead of any threat of protest, any protest, or even the appearance of the magazine. And the editor-in-chief of the magazine Free Inquiry, which is published by the Council for Secular Humanism in Amherst, New York, and I quote, this is a great quote, "To refuse to distribute a publication because of fear of vigilante violence is to undermine freedom of press, which is so vital for our democracy."
Mm-hmm.
And I think if you're not a subscriber, if you pick up 2600 on the newsstand, please try to find it somewhere else other than Borders, Walden Books, and if possible, buy your other books somewhere else than Borders and Walden Books.
Well, are there bookstores that are carrying this magazine?
Free Inquiry? I've seen it at Barnes & Noble's.
Uh-huh.
And I've seen 2600 at Barnes &
Noble's. Yeah, well, we're in all those places, but are they going to carry the issue that has these cartoons?
I don't know. The only article I've seen about people barring Free Inquiry is Borders and Walden Books. They've come out and said this already, sort of preempting any possible theoretical unlikely problems.
It's amazing times we live in. Like I've been saying to some people, we have printed a caricature of the Prophet Muhammad in 2600, but we're not going to tell you where it is.
Heathen.
It's in there someplace, though.
Infidel.
And since you don't know what he looks like, you're going to have a hard time finding it. But that's just the nature of confusion. Okay, anything else going on that's exciting? Any other technological developments you guys want to pass along? Yes, Jim.
I have something that is about 10 years too late for us. Some people may know Emmanuel and myself and a few other people who have appeared on this show in the past used to be part of a hacker collective called Network Development Labs years gone by. And one day, one of our members came in and said that there was a dumpster full of 286 machines. And, of course, we couldn't take advantage of this. But now, if you find a dumpster full of computer parts, books, anything great, there's a service in New York City that would be useful for you. It's called GarbageScout.com. And it's been up since January, and it has a map service, and you can give a location and describe the stuff that's in there and even post a photo. So if you're in New York City, and I'm sure that they'll expand this to other places, and you find something on the curb and you may not want it, go to GarbageScout.com and post this, and somebody will thank you, either in person or...
Well, I just wanted to add that you need a Web 2.0 enabled browser to go to that website.
What exactly is a Web 2.0 enabled browser?
Oh, it's very complicated.
Well, why don't you tell us since you brought it up?
I think you're stretching this out. I was just making a joke.
Ah, okay. Well, you see, our listeners don't know that. Not all of our listeners know. They're going to freak out and think, Web 2.0, oh my God, what do I have to do now? Yeah, it's maddening. Okay, our email address, oth@2600.com. Of course, we always like hearing from our listeners, and we'll be taking phone calls in a little bit as well. But I'd like to catch up on some mail that that we've gotten over the past couple of weeks. We haven't had a chance to get to all of it. Here's a writer from Brazil. I was doing some random dialing here, and I was wondering the significance of the different busy signals I get. For instance, sometimes I get something like 2222. That is the same tone repeating. Actually, I'm sort of doing it wrong. It should be 2222, like that, all one after another. But other times I get 2222222, a short and a long tone.
Now, how did he type that out?
He did TU-TU. U.
Oh, yeah, gotcha.
In all caps. The short pattern only appears after dialing the last digit. so it might be a standard busy line signal. The short long pattern usually appears even before dialing the last digit, but this is not the usual reorder signal I know of. Do you know anything about it? Well, every country is a little bit different. I know that the phone engaged signal, sometimes it's just a single tone, or sometimes it sounds like a fast ring in some countries. In your case, I think one time you're getting a bad number. The first one with the short ones might be you dialing the wrong number or something because you're getting it immediately. It's possible the second one is a busy tone. The only way to find out is do things like call yourself, see what it sounds like when you do that. Call numbers immediately surrounding the one that you're dialing now, and you might be able to figure it out that way. That letter comes from E. Typecase. Thanks for writing in from Brazil. Here's a letter from Finland. I've listened to your show some time now, and something came to mind. I live in Finland, a small Scandinavian country that you might have heard about in Conan O'Brien's show. And I didn't realize it was a real country. I just thought it was something he invented. What I've been noticing are the same things you guys speak about all the time on the show. Our rights are being taken away. The worst part about it in Finland is that no one seems to be doing anything about it. From phone tapping to freedom of speech, it's all being reconsidered in our government. The latest thing that I think is worth mentioning is the Muhammad Picture scandal. Suomen Sisu organization posted the pictures on their website, which is www.suomensisu.org, to demonstrate for the freedom of speech, which is the constitutional right in Finland, too. But what is interesting now in all this is that the National Bureau of Investigation of Finland, I didn't know about them, is investigating if that organization is committing a criminal act in doing this. And that investigation has been going on since January. Of course, there are also the bust of BitTorrent users and tracker admins. This is only the beginning, and I think Finland is on the same track as the U.S., only some time behind. I hope I don't have to witness it. Signed, Renu from Helsinki. And thanks for writing in, letting us know how things are declining over there. What's the scene like in Germany, McFly?
In principle, it's the same, not so hard, and we're a bit behind, and we hope to fight it at least a bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, you guys have always been an inspiration to us. At least the CCC has always been able to do things and do them well and get support behind them.
I want to update something that a caller called about last week, and we didn't get time to fully cover it. A caller proposed an encryption scheme involving one-time pads where A adds his message, adds his key to the message and sends it to B.
This is the one where you said it wouldn't work and you wouldn't tell us why.
Yes. Well,
okay, well, you going to tell us why this time?
Now I'm going to tell you why. All right. Sarif and I took a few minutes after the show last week to figure out exactly the problem. And if it turns out that if you take the two messages encrypted with a single key, so the first message in the scheme and the third message in the scheme, you add them together, and then you subtract the middle message, which is the message encrypted with both keys, then the net result is the plain text message. So an eavesdropper could easily get the original message transmitted with this scheme, which is proof that you should use one-time pads only once for any sort of security.
I'll bet it feels better getting that off your chest there.
Well, I don't want to just dismiss our listeners without, you know, telling them why.
Why are you dismissing them?
Yes.
Okay. Arseny.
This actually reminds me of something some person made. It's a little program that lets you take any file and then add another file to it, and then you can use that same file. You can take that same file out so you get the original file. So what they want to do is, I guess you could take an MP3, which is illegal, and add this like little file to it, making it a completely different file. So the argument is that new file illegal or not?
Yes, McFly.
Well, this is even the problem of stenographics, I think it's called, where you can, for example, put some information in pictures where you just bitmap, where you just get a color bit lighter or darker one bit, and you can represent, you can hide messages in that, for example, blow up something or...
Right, you're talking about using the least significant bits in images and audio files and stuff like that, so you can't hear or see a difference, but there's actually other content there.
Well, exactly. I think the term is steganography, and about the pad and cryptography and quantum cryptography, I think you can avoid a lot of the problems with eavesdropping of any channel. You can always tell if a quantum channel has been eavesdropped on because of the Heisenberg uncertainty principle.
I see. Okay. Interesting. Our phone number 222-209-2900. We'll be taking phone calls in just a little bit, but let's also read a couple more pieces of email. And again, you can write to us, oth@2600.com. We had quite a bit of response to the caller last week who had the mystery charges on their cell phone bill. Let's see, this guy writes in.
You're referring to the guy who used a calling card to call another country?
Yeah, he was calling Jamaica, I believe.
Right.
And he had all sorts of things rack up on his bill. Now, this person writes in, I'd formerly been one of those telephone monkeys outsourced to look after customer care for a wireless company, now taken over by Singular. What he most likely did was dial the carrier access number, the 1-800 number, and mostly followed their instructions and dialed the Jamaica number that he wanted to call. And then he pressed send again and initiated a three-way call or call waiting with line one connected to the 1-800 call and line two connected to the long-distance call at exorbitant rates. It's another example of how two different technologies used together in ways not originally expected, three-way calling and calling cards, can lead to unexpected risks. And thanks, Grant, for writing in on that.
We had an interesting problem when the phone tapping on cellular phones came, well, mobile phones came more in the site in Germany. The phone company, as they didn't pay the wiretapping by the state, charged the people getting tapped for the cost of being tapped on the phone bill, which has been quite interesting for 2 months.
You're saying that it would show up in the phone bill that, by the way, you're being tapped right now?
Yes, and you would have to pay it. And, well, it was only a big mistake, and we all take it back, and you never have been phone tapped, but
oh,
this
boy.
Has never happened.
That's awesome.
It was O2, by the way.
Another letter, actually from someone else named Grant. Hi, guys. Finally, I just wanted to say that I love the show. You're unlike any other radio station I've heard before. It's great to know that you provide such an open forum for free speech, and other radio stations most likely would not touch this. Although I live in the UK at the moment, it's good to know I can listen no matter where I am in the world. To the point, at the end of your last show, there was a complaint about an international phone card being used, which caused a bit of a bill of several thousand dollars. I had the same experience with my phone here about 4 months ago. I dialed the number given on the card and followed the instructions to call Australia. However, my phone dropped out a lot faster than I expected. I had managed to use up my £10 of credit on my phone in no time, and since then, I've never used a card to dial from a mobile. I'm still not sure the reason why this was, and it was lucky that I wasn't on a plan, otherwise I may not have noticed and received a fairly large bill also. I have a card in front of me now, and I noticed that they have several numbers, one of which is labeled from a mobile. From memory, this number wasn't on my last one, and I don't know whether that was the problem or not. I'm sure this has happened to a lot of people as well. It's a conspiracy by the phone companies to increase profits. And that from Grant A. Believe it or not, different Grant. Both writing in on the same thing. I don't know what the odds of that are.
Well, a lot of the European countries have different calling schemes and charges for things, but there's a lot of controversy locally here in New York about calling cards and people purchasing cards that offer a certain amount of minutes or a certain value, a currency value, and they're just not getting anywhere near what the face value of that is. And so there's all sorts of investigations going into that now. I don't know all the details, but it's something to look into.
Interesting. Here's a letter from Germany. I'm an exchange student. I read about your radio show in a computer. I read about it in a computer security book some weeks ago. 2 days ago, I was sitting in a bookshop and enjoying myself until the cell phone of some random woman began to ring. The ring itself was bad enough, but then she talked, 150 decibels or so. The whole bookshop could listen. It was so annoying, I finally asked her to go outside. Actually, he might be in the States. He says he's an exchange student from Germany, so I guess maybe he's in the States and marveling at the sound of our voices. Things like this happen to me every single day. It is bad enough that cell phones exist, but how people use them without even considering that it might annoy somebody when they talk in such a high volume. That makes me want to have a law or something that doesn't allow cell phones in some places. I'd be glad to hear your opinions about this. Signed, ZB. Keep the conspiracy going.
We were actually guilty of this the other week.
No, you were guilty of this.
We were all listening, and I was told by many people to put it on speakerphone.
You were told by your own mind.
let's just straighten it out here for all the people that got involved in this altercation. All right, we were in a place, and in fact, we were going to call that number that we were calling. We found this number. It's a really cool number that gives out your unlisted name and address if you give it a phone number. Sort of like something we did before, but they're still doing it. And we were testing it out in the place that we were in, and you wanted everybody to hear, so you put your phone on speakerphone, much to the chagrin of everybody else in the establishment.
Everybody wanted to hear. Everybody at the table wanted to hear.
I did not get my ballot. I never voted on that issue.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think most of the people sitting there were equally as guilty.
And before I forget, something else that we did after the show last week. Which,
oh, man.
We really should talk about this a little bit. We were just waiting for a bus, and in the street we noticed, what was it, a yellow box?
It was one of those little, I think it was orange or yellow
orange,
or something.
Doesn't matter the color, but
it turned out to be one of those boxes that they put on the side of the street.
You know, with the big rubber hose that goes all the way across the street, and the cars go over it, and it counts, I guess, the number of cars.
Right. And so I think it was Mike who first kind of started stomping on it, and I was curious if it was actually counting his stomps or not. And so I go to the box, and there's a little notch for a padlock on there, that and it wasn't locked at all. Uh-huh. And so I just kind of opened the box, and, you know, there was the counter, and, you know, it was up to, I don't know, 500 and something thousand.
500 and something thousand?
Oh, yeah, or even... Yeah, 500 and something.
You sure
thousand.
Wasn't 50,000?
No. I think 500.
That's number of cars that went by that day.
Number of axles.
Number of axles. Yeah. Okay, that's still
I think,
a lot of axles.
I'm pretty sure it was high like that.
Okay. Now, was it a digital display?
It was an interesting digital display with an RS-232 port and a couple of other things. And
so basically, it just counts the number of axles or people stomping on the thing.
Or people stomping. Yeah.
Did you actually observe as you stomped?
Yes.
Yes. Actually.
And every time you stomped, it counted.
And then my finger accidentally slipped.
Oh, it did not. We said, what would happen if we do this? And we did it. I don't have any problems with this. Anybody in the city wants to come up and talk to us about it, fine. But you shouldn't leave your damn boxes on the sidewalk unlocked, all right?
Well, there was a cool reset button.
Yeah, reset button, and you pushed it.
I slipped. I was pushed. Uh-huh, I tripped something.
You know, your stories are getting less and less credible.
So this might be the reason why the traffic survey on Water Street shows zero cars going by last week instead of 500,000 or however
it was,
many
it was,
axles.
It was high like that. It was something like that.
So this is how simple it is to completely screw up the infrastructure. And I guess they're never going to repave this street now or something.
Now we know why there's so many cars in Manhattan. People like you have gone ahead and essentially told the Department of Transportation, well, you know, there are no cars going by, none at all.
But, you know, there was another one on the other side of the street that was also unlocked, and we were able to open that one and see how many were going downtown. So I guess if they ever do finalize this study, they're going to show that everybody's heading downtown and nobody's going uptown, and maybe that'll help rebuild downtown, you know, because everybody wants to be there. Arseny?
Well, it was really stupid because there was actually a lock, like, next to the pole that was holding the chain together. Uh-huh. And the chain, I guess, was holding the box. And they could have just used that same padlock to keep it locked. They really didn't even need two locks.
Who knows? Who knows what goes through their minds? But, it's a bit of mischief. You know, you should be careful when you look at things like this, but you should always look at things. I wouldn't have hit the reset button, although I'm glad you did because it gives us something to talk about. But I think they got it coming.
I slipped.
Yeah, you slipped. speaking of cell phone manners, did you hear about what happened in Brooklyn yesterday? This is an unbelievable story. There actually was a riot yesterday in Brooklyn. You heard about this, Jim?
Yes. I'm concerned with all things Brooklyn.
In Borough Park, residents rushed to the 66th Precinct House chanting "No justice, no peace" to protest what witnesses say was the rough treatment of a 75-year-old Hasidic business owner by police. Now, get this: the guy was basically approached by police. You know what the offense was? Talking on his cell phone in his car. What do you think about that?
We had this discussion.
Yeah. Well, no, it's kind of interesting though, because apparently he didn't do what they commanded him to do, and that always rubs me the wrong way when police command you to do something like you work for them or something, and the reaction to him not obeying them immediately was them dragging him out of his car, and roughing him up in various ways, according to witnesses. Now, what's particularly interesting about this this charge of talking on the cell phone? Do you know he was parked in his car? He was double parked on a street talking on a cell phone in front of his family-owned bakery in 16th Avenue around 6:30 p.m.
What is it relevant that the bakery is family-owned?
I don't know. It's just in the story. I guess they thought it was a nice touch. So when police attempted to handcuff the guy, two other Hasidic men tried to step in. A crowd then formed, and the scene quickly grew unruly. And I say, God bless them. You know, I wish New Yorkers had everybody else's back like this, because whenever cops do something like this, you have to step in and object. I mean, the guy sitting in a car, not even moving, talking on a cell phone, And what? That's a big issue? McFly.
I had to pay €25 for that in Germany also.
For what? Double parking or talking on a phone?
Parking with a car and talking on the phone. The car was switched off.
So what did they give you a ticket for?
For phoning in the car.
For phoning in the car, it's not moving, it's not even on.
Phoning, well, the key was in the lock.
Uh-huh.
And as it is when you're drunk, when the key's in the lock, you are guilty of
Even if the car isn't running.
Yes, if you see it in the driver's seat and the keys in the lock, it is the same as if the car's running.
There is a long history in the United States of courts ruling that if you are in the driver's seat, definitely if the keys are in the ignition, even if the engine is off, definitely if the keys are in the ignition, sometimes the courts rule this even if the keys are not in the ignition, if you are in the driver's seat, almost everything that would be applied if you were moving still goes. Driving drunk, driving unsafely, talking on a cell phone, even if the car is stopped, if you are in the driver's seat, they still get
you. So if you pull over and take a nap, you're going to get charged with driving while sleeping?
I was once in a situation with that. As everyone knows, I don't drive. With a girlfriend at the time, no one anyone knows, we pulled over and we were nearly arrested for that, essentially. She was dead tired, couldn't drive anymore. I couldn't drive. And yeah, it was an appropriate place to stop, even though there was a giant shoulder way off the whole bit.
I just think cops have better things they should be doing than looking for people talking on cell
exactly?
phones.
You should call
them. Well, I don't know, something. Maybe taking their SATs again or something.
Checking
I don't
up on
know.
People who are singing along to The Clash, perhaps. The other interesting thing about this altercation in Brooklyn is that a supposed witness on television said that when the cops approached the guy and attempted to issue him a ticket and or arrest him, whatever, it's unclear exactly what they wanted to do, he could not understand them because he is hard of hearing, according to the witness. Now, which leads to the question, well, then, why is he on his cell phone?
Well, he could have had some kind of
well,
device.
Yeah, exactly. But still, it's there's a lot of weird stuff going on here.
Uh-huh. Yes, McFly.
Yeah, you should call the police more often that you see something suspicious so they don't have any more time to...
I actually call the police a lot. Not a lot, but more than most people because I report things. Like the other day, I saw a traffic light that was stuck green in the wrong direction and it was, you know, traffic was piling up. And it's weird what your cell phone does when you call the police. My cell phone, I use Verizon, it locks up. It goes into emergency mode. And you have to hit a button to get it out of that mode. And then about 10 minutes later, it makes a little ding-dong noise. I don't know what that even means. So I'm not suggesting people call the police, but when you do, take notice of how it works because it's kind of interesting.
Did you try to call them with *677?
Why would I do that? I dialed 911.
That's good because supposedly there are faxes and emails popping up all over telling people that on their cell phone they should call the police with *677, which
that means you're dialing 7 because *677 is block caller ID.
Well, apparently, I may have the number wrong. This was a news story the other day. But apparently this only works in Ontario, and I'm sure someone from Ontario will call us with the correct number.
I don't know why it would work in Ontario or anywhere else for that matter.
I have an interesting cop story somewhat related to a story I think we talked about 2 weeks ago, which was that cops shouldn't be enforcing radio-related things. And I think we were talking about a pirate operator or something on what
in near Florida,
Anyway, I was in the park yesterday, actually, playing on HF in the amateur radio bands, and I had a box full of mostly homebrew equipment, like a little QRP transceiver and, you know, CW key and stuff like that, and it was dusk, and the park's signs state that, you know, the park closes at dusk, and so my car was still parked there, and, you know, a cop comes along and makes a lot of noise with his sirens and his horns, and I start taking down my antennas and packing everything up and whatever, so I walk up to him, and he's like, "Anyone else back there?" And no, not that I know of. And what were you doing back there anyway? And it's a park, and so I wasn't, you know, I wasn't sure if this was the sort of question that would be appropriate. Anyway, so I basically told him, I was like, I was playing with the radio. Mm-hmm. And he goes, what do you mean playing with the radio? And I was like, I was listening to shortwave, and I show him this box of like all basically homemade junk. And he goes, what?
See, this is your mistake, Joe. Your next response is to ask him, am I being detained? And if the answer is no, just leave. You don't have to explain to the cop why you're standing around in a park.
That might work on the little ACLU card, but it doesn't work in real life, okay? Because they'll do what they did to the guy in Brooklyn. They'll tackle you, they'll drag you away, and there won't be a crowd of people to like burn fires in the middle of the street to protect
and
you.
And that's the problem. It was me and him and no one for like probably half a mile or so.
Yeah, well, it could have killed you right there, buried buried the body, and that would have been it. We wouldn't have asked any questions.
Well, the thing is, you want to sort of get on his nice side so that if anything does end up happening, you know, it's not so serious.
So did he succeed in getting on his nice side?
Oh, it was fine. I mean, he was basically just like, get out of here. But he totally didn't understand the concept of what I was doing and why I would want to be there and whatever. So it was just pretty interesting.
How come cops always get to tell you to get out of here? Can't you ever tell a cop, you get out of here? You know, I'd like to do that.
I've tried. It doesn't work.
Yeah, it doesn't work, does it?
Well, it works in your homeland.
Well, the problem with McFly's proposal to call the police whenever I see something suspicious is mm-hmm. most of the suspicious things I see are being perpetrated by the police,
mm-hmm.
and they don't. There's no way to report like police who are running red lights and driving on the sidewalk.
I tried that once.
It doesn't work.
I tried to report a cop running red light. He almost ran me over once with no lights on and at nighttime, and they refused to take the report. And I started getting prank called by cops like 3 hours later. I got a call from somebody who said, "You called the police?" It's like, who wants to know? And they wouldn't tell me.
Well, you shouldn't tell them that's the police, but I couldn't have seen that there was a police. I just
but how else do I report the guy if I don't say it's a cop car? Here's his number. You know, they.
I assure you, got different number plates here. Sorry.
Uh-huh. Okay, a couple more letters, and we'll take some phone calls. 212-209-2900. Per the extended conversation on last week's show, that was with Seraph talking about his T-Mobile nightmare trying to get out of a contract. I always record every phone discussion with any company or agency with the new tiny digital recorders with USB ports. It's simple to just set the recorder on the speakerphone during the call. That way, I always have a recording of exactly what was said on both sides of the phone. Signed, Jim. Good idea, Jim. Nowadays, every cell phone company has free roaming. This is another suggestion from a different listener. Because of this, there is a mention in the cell phone contract that if the customer spends more time on roaming than on the carrier network, it's grounds for dismissal of the contract. So all you have to do is for every however many minutes you spend on their network, spend twice that on a different network, and they'll simply drop your contract as you costing them too much money.
I don't think that's true, though, the roaming thing, that every carrier has free roaming. That's not true, but... Mm-hmm. It makes sense that if you were on somebody else's network more than you are on their network.
If you have that kind of a plan, I guess, where you have free roaming on a different network and you're able to, but how do they manage to get away with it without some kind of penalty being imposed? I guess they can cancel your contract anytime they want, but if you try to do it, you get fined $250.
To be honest, I haven't read the contracts. They're fairly
nobody,
long. And
nobody has.
Well, but you know who wrote the contract and you can thereby guess what it probably says.
All right.
Let's see, this, what else here? The internet now features this particular site, jaja.com, jaja.com. Using voice over IP, they put in your telephone number and the number you want to call. Then they ring you, sort of like calling long distance in the old days or calling with a Liechtenstein phone. There's a 5-minute demo of the service. I think that's pretty cool, but I also wonder... could you not use this to call any two people and hook them together and start all sorts of arguments and fights?
You know, I tried this service today.
Did you?
And it didn't work.
Really? What happened?
I had it call my cell phone and then call the number I wanted to talk to, and it called my cell phone and said, please wait while we connect your call. But then I just got like a fast busy. Didn't work.
Well, maybe the person on the other end was unavailable or something.
I don't know.
It reminds me of those services that say they'll spoof caller ID for you, where... In order to do this, they call you, and then you enter in the number that you want to call. And this is all on an online web form, I believe, and it'll call both parties. And then, you know, in addition to connecting two random people, you can also fake the caller ID.
Interesting. How would one of you like to set up our computer to call one of our cell phones and the radio station at the same time, and we can see if it actually works? Call the other line. Meanwhile, a couple other letters here. Thanks for your show. If it was possible to get voice over IP fully working in the studio, it would be interesting to have special guests on from Australia and the Asian countries that share its time zones. They're about 12 hours offset from New York, so guests might comfortably join your show before going to work in the morning. I always enjoy hearing about the projects and perspectives of European hackers when you have them on your show. This might be fun, too. Signed, Tim, listening on WBCQ, the shortwave station. And great, we should really get that voice over IP working once and for all so we can do things like that. It would be a lot of fun. Let's see what else here. Okay, this person writes in, I don't know if you heard, but Jo Caro was released from her captors in Iraq. This is good news, but something in the second paragraph of the article that was released about it intrigued me. An Islamist website is mentioned, but as usual, no URL is given. Do you guys know of any actual Islamist websites, or is it just propaganda? I'd love to visit one of them so I can see just what the media is talking about. Signed, M2 Mike. I imagine these are sites that only the media knows about, and they're probably keeping it very very secretive. That way they kind of know that it's real, but they don't have everybody in the world finding out at the same time as them.
Well, we are trying to contact some Islamic websites, but usually the most problem on those websites is that you need some Islamic people to read Arabic,
right?
Which not really many people do.
Uh-huh.
But it's also a problem in countries speaking Latin. I was trying to find some German websites, mass media websites, in English version for the people over here, and I only found one. So the language barrier is really a big one on the internet.
It is. It is, to this day, believe it or not. Except for those of us who speak English, it's very easy for us, but for the most part. Okay, we have this thing set up now. Yes, McFly.
I disagree with that it's very easy for those who speak English, because I tried to find the English website from the German point of view.
Mm-hmm.
And I only found the Spiegel Online, who has an international website. Most of the major German newspapers who have the big websites don't have an English version.
Uh-huh.
So with English, you only get to the main page and then found out that you got the wrong language installed on yourself.
Interesting. All right, so we have the thing set up. We're going to call Redbird's phone, and we're going to hook up to the radio station at the same time.
So first it's going to call the station, and we'll pick up, and then allegedly we'll be connected.
All right, this call costs, it went off the screen, but it was like 0.01 something cents or something like that. Let's see. Good evening.
Please hold. Jaja will connect your call.
Okay, now we're going to see if your phone rings. And if your phone does ring, oh, it's ringing.
Unknown call.
All right. Why don't you pick that up?
Hello.
Hello.
Oh, you sound pretty good. I'm going to turn down the microphone over here. Now talk to us.
This is Redbird on a cell phone.
There's a delay. It's kind of disconcerting here, but you're able to hear me fine.
Absolutely. Sounds great. And no caller ID information was sent, but it does work.
Okay. There is quite a delay, though.
Well.
Yeah, when you say something, it's about half a second, I think.
I'm curious how the call's routed, but I guess it...
All right, enough of that. Okay. I don't know, but it's you can really annoy a lot of people. But, you know, years ago, I used to have a lot of fun with multi-key phones where I'd push down different buttons and connect people. And everybody would, of course, think that the other person called them, and it resulted in all sorts of mayhem and fun for everybody. But that site again, jaja.com, jaja.com. And this call cost 0.0174 cents per minute, but who's paying for it?
No one's paying. So it's a free demo, but they want you to sign up for paid service.
Okay. So if we were to use that, it would cost virtually nothing. Okay, I think that's just about everything for this week, letter-wise. So let's take some phone calls, 212-209-2900. Again, our email address, oth@2600.com. Snail mail, if you want to write to us, is off the hook. Care of WBAI. 120 Wall Street.
Oh, man.
10th floor.
He just set you back. New York, New York.
10005.
See, Walter, I'm waiting for my assignment, and you keep screwing up. And
yeah, that's what happens. All right, let's take one of our listener phone calls down here. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hi, what's up?
BAI?
Yes, speak up, please.
Yeah, regarding the encrypted phone. This guy Phil Zimmerman's got a thing called Z Phone for voice over IP.
Mm-hmm.
Just read about it yesterday. I haven't been able to test it out.
Okay, has anybody here tested it out?
No, I also read about it. But
yeah, supposedly the reviews are glowing, considering it's just in beta.
Additionally, regarding translating web pages, it's slightly cumbersome, but you can go to AltaVista or a few of those translations and put in URLs, and they'll spit it out in a myriad of different languages.
And all sorts of misperceptions as to what words mean. but it's fun to read.
True, indeed. Probably political or POV-type stuff might be difficult, but more, if you fact-based websites, maybe it's a little easier.
Mm-hmm.
I was trying to read the other day a website which was in Swedish, which is a language that I don't speak. And the Babelfish doesn't speak Swedish at all, and I went to some other website which claimed to translate, and it was so bad, I had no idea what it was about.
Yeah, yeah, that happens occasionally. I went on a foreign Amazon site the other day and ordered something without knowing the language at all, and I think it's going to go through. It was actually pretty simple. Once you just sort of hold it up to another site with a different language, you sort of know what they might be saying at this point in time, and sort of an adventure.
I've done stuff like that, but for, you know, articles that have like paragraphs and things like that,
mm-hmm.
it doesn't work so well.
No, no. And good evening. You're on the air.
Hi.
What's up?
I had a question about a cell phone and its recording mechanism.
Okay.
I had a landline service that I canceled with a small independent phone company. And when I moved out of the apartment, and what they did was they reinstated the landline 2 months later and back charged me the 2 months that the landline they happily canceled 2 months previously.
Uh-huh.
So I call them up, and I bring this to their attention, and they're trying to straighten it out. I call them back 2 days later after they don't return my call, and I use my recording mechanism on my i730 Nextel phone.
Okay.
It works the first time, but then I wasn't sure, I was a little shady on the rules. Like I wanted to make sure I was recording them and then they knew about it. So the second time I called, I let them know. And as soon as I let them know, my recording mechanism went dead on my phone.
Really?
And it never worked again.
I don't think they have that kind of power.
I'll tell you right now, but the call before, it worked. It was about a 10-minute call, it recorded the whole thing. I deleted it.
Uh-huh.
And then I called them back, and then when I spoke to them again, I told the woman, and as soon as I told the woman, I'm talking about a matter of 2 seconds, my phone call just dropped off of the record. It just ended, and then my recording mechanism never worked.
Can I ask where you live?
I live in Brooklyn.
Then you live in New York. You don't have to even tell them. You can just record the phone call, and as long as one party knows about it, you're fine.
I'm curious as to what you said to the other party. Did you say, oh, by the way, I'm recording this call? Or did you go into more specifics?
No, I just said that I'm recording this call. And she said, you know, that's illegal if I don't agree to it. I said, I'm not sure about that. But what I'll do is we'll record this call. And if, you know.
Don't they have a recording themselves that says for quality purposes this call may be recorded?
They do.
So can't they just apply that to you, that you might be the one doing the quality control?
I know. It seemed like the logical thing to say. But, you know, in the moment, I was really pissed off that I had a $235 bill that, you know, I shouldn't have had in the first place.
Uh-huh. They should have no problem with you recording a phone call from one of their reps to you, where they have to hide.
Yeah. Well, they're rat bastard phone company.
Well, even if they have this capability, I can't understand how they would know to apply it to a cell phone. Did you say you were recording on a cell phone and they hit the, you know, avoid cell phone recording? If you had just said, by the way, I'm recording this, they wouldn't know whether you have a tape recorder, a wax cylinder machine going, a stenographer, or what?
I may have said, I can't remember, but I may have said I'm recording this on my cell phone. Or, who knows, maybe they applied all their weaponry at once.
Well, I never thought of them as like a death star, but I guess they're capable of doing that.
I can't imagine how they would be.
Yeah, I don't think so.
I don't know how Nextel phones do the things that they do. They have the two-way radio thing. They also have two-way control of features. Can they disable features remotely?
Possibly.
Well, it is a proprietary protocol, I think, IDEN, right, or something. But I can't imagine that it would be something that they would have control over.
It sounds a bit far-fetched, but
Well, I bet you if you go down to the phone company that's mm-hmm. based in New Jersey, all the salespeople and all the people who work in that office probably all have third red-eye lasers in the middle of their forehead.
Okay, well, I think we've demonized
Let me just nail one thing down.
Yes.
You're having this conversation with a landline company, not with your cell phone provider, correct?
Yes, I was phasing out all landlines.
Oh, I thought you were talking to those same people.
That's why this is getting even more far-fetched.
Okay, now they don't have that power.
If you're talking to your cell phone company, yeah, possibly they can control your features.
Yeah, I was calling from my cell phone to the landline company.
What was the landline company, by the way? You can tell us.
All right, Spectratel.
Never heard of them.
Yeah, well, I guess not many people have. And I looked them up on the internet to see what their rating was and how many complaints they had lodged against them.
Uh-huh.
And there was only one other than mine. And it was just becoming a point, not even the money anymore. It was just principle. Like, they were trying to get over. I had moved out of the apartment, and they just happened to reactivate the line and then send me bills.
Well, definitely a complaint is in order, and the complaints do make a difference. Just find out whatever authority is overseeing them. I think in this case it would be the Public Service Commission, but it could be the FCC as well. And file a complaint, and believe me, it does make a difference. Even companies as big as Verizon, they feel the effects of that. We're going to move on. Thanks for that interesting call there. And good evening. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I think that... I think the answer to the question of the situation happened with the gentleman in the park, and I think that the police take advantage of people not knowing their rights or people being afraid or inexperienced to not speak up their rights.
Well,
and I think that if people voice their rights, the police would not More people voice rights, the police would not take advantage of these situations.
Sure, but one of my main points in the story was something that we had discussed in the previous week or 2 weeks, was that police shouldn't be stepping out of their field of expertise if they do indeed have one, and enforcing laws that apply to things that should be governed by the FCC, including radio, which he clearly didn't understand in this circumstance. But you also have to keep in mind that I was in a park totally by myself. There was really nobody else there, and it was just me and the cop, and whatever he said would have been the truth, and whatever I said would have been a lie to anyone else who would have heard the story from both of us. So I think...
Did you have your FCC license with you?
Oh, absolutely.
By the way, I'm a ham radio operator, too. It's a great hobby, by the way. Do you operate? Could you give your call sign? Or you'd rather not?
No, sure. K2BAT.
Oh, okay. I'm W2HL. Glad to meet you.
All right.
this is WBAI here.
And what was the windup with what happened in Borough Park? I'm curious to know.
Well, basically, to sum up, the guy was dragged out of his car, supposedly, according to witnesses, because he wasn't complying with what the police said. And this was all started because they noticed him talking on a cell phone in a double parked car.
And do you know what the windup was?
He ended up with a desk appearance ticket. There were at least two other arrests. The first two people who, quote, came to his aid, unquote. There may have been others. There were a number of small trash fires in the middle of the street, 16th Avenue, in the neighborhood of 48th Street in Brooklyn. And they sent riot cops out. It was all pretty quiet by about 3 a.m.
Right. Okay, thank you. And I just wanted to comment on, I think that, if more people were voiced their rights, police definitely step over. They go a little bit too far at times. They're inquisitive. They ask questions when there isn't really probable cause for them to ask questions.
Right. I think it's a difficult situation when the only two witnesses are you and the officer.
Yeah, so it's definitely different than I totally sympathize, because years ago when I found myself in the middle of North Carolina being pulled over by a trio of cops, actually, and demanding to search my car when they had no real right to, you sort of feel very intimidated that, if I don't do this, what's going to happen to me? And I don't think, I think the situation is very different when a crowd of your friends is around.
Right. If more people were there, I would have certainly thought about giving him a much harder time. It doesn't matter what I'm doing in the park. It's a public park. And if it's closing now, I'll leave. However,
you don't have to get into an argument. You can just leave.
Right.
Okay.
All right. Thanks.
I'm enjoying the show thoroughly, and you guys have a very good evening.
Thanks. Thanks for your call.
7-3.
All right. Yeah. How did that phrase evolve anyway? Do you have any idea?
I don't know, no.
You just blindly say it, you have no idea what it really means. 7-3.
I'm sure we'll get just 73 or 73?
73, 73, whatever. I don't know.
All right. Well, we're going to get letters now.
It's one of those things people say it different ways.
I know. I just like to know why I say certain things, you know? Like, you know, take it easy. What does that mean? What are you taking easy exactly?
It.
What's it?
It.
Nobody knows what it is.
It's everything.
Uh-huh. Then you should say take everything easy. I don't know. Good evening. You're on the air.
Yeah, good evening.
What's on your mind?
I got a question about a landline.
Okay.
Okay. I got this landline, right? And I became remiss on my billing, and they shut it off. And then miraculously, some period later, it got turned back on. Now, it's been like a year and a half.
Turn on your radio, please.
Yeah, sure.
Okay. So we're hearing two of you.
So this landline got turned back on. Now, the trunk, the exchange stayed the same, but the number changed. So now I have this phone that I'm speaking to you on right now,
mm-hmm.
and I'm not, you know, not being billed on it, so I'm getting free service from the network. And I'm just wondering what my ramifications are. Like, am I going to see a bill somewhere down the line, you know, for like, you know, $30,000 at some future date?
Let me go out on a limb and say, do you live in an apartment or something similar?
No, I live in the hinterlands of America, actually.
Really? That's a bit surprising, because usually what happens in a case like this is your line is defunct, your account is defunct, they turn on service for somebody else, they cross a wire somewhere,
exactly.
And you're piggybacking on either somebody else's line that they don't know about and you just haven't coincidentally picked up the phone at the same time, or it's an extra line that was supposed to be assigned to somebody when they wanted three lines, two get installed, one gets turned on but not correctly installed, and then they complain, hey, I only have two lines. They turn on and install a third line in there, and what should have been their third line is your new line. The tip-off is generally the change of the telephone number. It's an error of some sort. I don't know exactly what.
This happened to me also for about 6 months. After that, it got turned down again, and I never heard anything. It just would say good luck.
Okay.
Also, I live in an apartment building as well, and in the basement, actually in the laundry room, there's, you know, the big telco panel, and it's never locked. There's never even a cover on it.
Mm-hmm.
And the telco people leave little notes to each other, like, I have absolutely no idea what the hell this line is. Like, literally, just like that.
Uh-huh.
And even worse words that I can't say on the air. And it's just really funny, because there's notes left all over the place. I don't know where this line goes, and things are just hooked up,
You press the reset button in there too?
No. but you could easily connect any pair that you want to your line, and they would never know. It's such like a rat's nest.
Yeah, it totally is. If you look at all the wires there.
Okay, but this is just like a residential line. And mm-hmm. my question is, can you tell me like if I have any like liability on this line? Like, can I be charged a bill, some future bill?
Well, you could be held liable for the calls that they can prove you made if they're able to do that. The question is that something they can do easily?
No, because this is like the first long-distance call I've made in like 2 years.
Uh-huh. The one to us?
Correct.
You must really be in the hinterlands to refer to a call as long-distance these days, because nothing is long-distance anymore.
Yeah, I'm in the heartlands of America. I got a big antenna, and I'm listening to you from the heartlands of America.
Could you say cool. What state?
Well, it's a commonwealth.
It's a commonwealth. Let's figure this out.
Pennsylvania? Kentucky?
Yeah, Pennsylvania.
Oh.
That's not so far away.
Well, if he's near Pittsburgh, it's far away.
That's true, but still, you know, long distance. It's long distance, I consider maybe calling Romania or something.
He's our age, okay? He regards it as long distance.
How do you know how old he is by listening to him on the...
No, but I'm saying that's the assumption.
All right. Thanks for your call. We're going to try and get one more in. Let's go all the way down here. And good evening. You're on the air.
All right. Thanks for your call.
Oh, that's me. Okay, can you take the phone away from the radio device and talk to us?
Yeah, okay.
What's on your mind?
Oh, I'm trying to find out. I've been seeing stuff on the internet about base stations for cell phone.
Uh-huh.
I was wondering if you could tell me, are they any good? You know, do they work where you disconnect the landline and it'll run the phones throughout the house?
I know what you're talking about, and these are sort of hybrid devices that switch between a landline and cellular service when you're in your house, and I have no comment on them, but I know they exist.
How long have they been around for?
I started seeing them pop up... you know, end of last year.
Sounds like a good idea if it works. Question is if. You know, are these things expensive?
I think I was looking at about $149.
Yeah, that's pricey for something that might not work. I'd say keep listening and see what people say about them. I'm sure one of us is going to use one at some point, and we'll let you know how good or how bad it is. That's our show pretty much for tonight. So I want to thank everybody for calling in, for listening. Now, McFly, I believe on German radio, they're listening to us tomorrow or something. And we're gonna actually have an extended program that follows this program, right?
Yes, we will have c-radar.ccc.de in 22 hours.
Okay, so if you're listening to that now in Germany, is there something you want to say to them, maybe in German?
Well, I don't think I should say anything in German. We want to do the whole show in English this time, which shouldn't be a big problem because most Germans speak English. Mm-hmm. And we hope some of those Americans who listen to your show will just tune into our live stream. They work also over here.
And how can people listen to your show from over here?
c-radar.ccc.de. Just go to the website and click on live stream and you're on the live stream.
Okay. Don't forget, folks, 2600 meetings are this Friday coming up, and we're going to have another Hope Coordination meeting at the Citigroup Center in New York City between the hours of 5 and 8. If you're interested in being part of the Hope Conference, whether it be the network, we're going to be talking about blinking lights a little bit. I know you won't be there, but a bunch of us will be talking about those projects and other things. Just show up and tell us what you can do. Check out the website, www.hope.net, for more updates. See you next week.
Yes, the island, you know, the thing. I just come back from Barbados and it's snowing. I'm going back to the airport and going back to Barbados. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM.
Ja, das war Off the Hook, ein Mitschnitt aus New York. Wie ihr gehört habt, war der McFly auch dabei und hat sich auch an der Sendung beteiligt. Ja, und weil wir jetzt so viel Text und Content gehört haben, werden wir erstmal in unserer alten Tradition erstmal ein bisschen Musik spielen. Ja, die Musik, die ihr gerade gehört habt, hat uns heute die Chaney mitgebracht. Sind das neue CDs oder
sind das schon ältere Tracks? Das sind keine CDs, das sind Tracks vom letzten Jahr. Die sind und zwar ist das von einem Mannheimer Label, Tilt Recordings. Das sind aus der Reihe T Free. Also das sind 320er MP3s, die man sich frei runterladen kann. Und wir werden, denke ich, im Laufe des Abends von diesem Label noch ein bisschen mehr hören.
Ja, schöne Liquid Drum and Bass. Und jetzt kommen wir zu einem Interview, das Elmar geführt hat. Kautmunk, du wolltest noch was sagen?
Hier klingelt ein Handy.
Ja, also wir probieren hier gerade mit Voice-over-IP rum, dass wir mit New York Kontakt aufnehmen können. Es hat zwischendurch auch schon mal geklappt, aber noch nicht so richtig. Die haben dort technische Probleme und wir haben hier auch noch nicht alle technischen Probleme so gelöst. Und hier im Studio klingt gerade ein Handy, mittlerweile nicht mehr. Ja, deswegen wird jetzt erstmal noch ein Interview, was Elmar schon vorher aufgenommen hat, abgespielt. Das ist wieder mit den Leuten von Off the Hook. Dort wird jetzt speziell nochmal über die deutsche und die amerikanische Hackerszene geredet. Und ich denke mal, das hören wir uns jetzt an.
Nun, da sind wir wieder. Das war Off the Hook. Und nun sind wir wieder bei Zirada. And as this is the international studio, and we will do this all in English. So, there are we. The American hacker scene. When I see it as a German, this is always the big legend when you talk about the American hacker scene. And after I came over to here, I realized that the German hacker scene is a bit the legend over here in America.
Definitely.
It's the old saying in the United States, the grass is always greener on the other side of the fence. We have our specialties, you have yours. I mean...
Yeah, exactly. I think definitely there are lots of things that you, the German, can learn from the Americans, and I think
exactly? I'm curious. I'm curious what you can learn from us, because I can tell you what we can learn from you. We can learn how to organize things. We can learn how to build things, how to be creative, how to get lots of people to show up every single year at the Hacker Conference, the Congress in Berlin. And it just seems like, you guys had, 10 gigs of bandwidth there, and we're struggling 16. To get 16. Hey. We're struggling to get, just a T1 over here. So we can learn that. What can you learn from us?
Hard question, huh?
No, we had this discussion about 3 or 4 days before in the Heck Halfway House. For those who don't know, this is a small flat in Brooklyn where some people who would themselves call part of the hacker scene over here. What can we learn from the Germans, from the Americans? I think this should be part of those what should be talked on the C-Radar then. from my point of view, I think there are some kind of motivation things. It always looks very good in Germany, but you can be sure this is maybe, as you say, you can't learn anything from the Americans. This is maybe the same thing.
You have much less problems with the authorities over there, right? They seem to support what you do.
Yes, this is, not completely. We have a kind of a support as we have, for example, somebody from the German parliament, from the government party, speaking at the Congress. Might be a good idea to try this also over here. I think some people say, you had the guy who invented the internet, called himself inventing the internet, Al Gore. Maybe you should invite him.
I don't think Al Gore would want to be seen with us.
Yeah. Yeah, this might be one of the differences.
I don't think I'd want to be seen with Al Gore, so it's about
there
fair.
You go. Yeah.
Okay. So, this is the legendary party over here where they all say they learn from us and they don't. We don't have anything to learn from them. I don't really agree, but don't have an example at the moment. So,
I think people should come over and maybe they'll learn something by accident.
I hope there are lots of people coming over to the Hope. And we're working on it.
Everyone here, or most of the people here, have attended the HOPE conferences as well as the CCC congresses. So I think maybe we can start with a little comparison between those two and discuss what we've noticed to be the differences between the two conferences.
Okay.
Yeah, well, like I said, we've tried to model the Hope conferences after the things we've seen in Europe. And what that means is getting a lot of international participation, getting people to come from Germany and from Italy and from the Netherlands and England and all over the world. And I think the sense of cooperation, exploration, sharing information that comes out of the conferences over there has pretty much come over here as well. In those particular conferences that we've had. We've had five so far, and they all are pretty unique in bringing people from all around the world. And it's just not a lot of people fooling around. There's people actually learning from each other, meeting people from different parts of the planet, and basically having a lot of memories to last them until the next time they do it. So the biggest compliment that I've gotten for the Hope conferences is that they remind people of what it's like to go to a conference overseas, because that's exactly what we were trying to emulate when we started.
One of the interesting concerns that I've heard overseas when I went to the CCC Congress and also What the Hack and everything else over there was that a lot of people are actually afraid to come over to America because of the government policies of now requiring fingerprints and all sorts of other things that they're just not comfortable with giving our government. So I think that might be inhibiting us a little bit.
Yeah, and you know, to that I say, you know, okay, there are lots of things to be afraid of in this life. You know, we're all going to die someday, and nobody knows what that means, and we're all frightened of it. But we're going to live our lives anyway and not be afraid. I'm not comparing coming to America with dying, but you know, you have to sort of look at the challenges in life, the unknown factors that might happen in your day to day events, and just ask yourself, is it something that I want to give up because I'm too afraid? A lot of people come to America. Yeah, they might have to deal with some unpleasant people at customs, but they're going to get in the end anyway, and they're going to attend the conference and meet all sorts of people, and it will change their lives. It's reaching the point where other countries are getting as bad as the U.S. as far as requiring fingerprints or all sorts of other hostile questions if you enter the country. But if you let them keep you from traveling as a result, then they've won. So I think you just have to not see it that way.
Well, what I saw, I needed to get bypass the fingerprint scanner when I came in this country, and I just noticed that the temperature on the flight has been really high, and I was sweating all this time, and my fingers are swollen up, and I trained this before. I've bought a fingerprint scanner by my own, and you can easily test at home that if you, for example, just sit like 8 hours with your fingers under your ankle, they start sweating. If you do this for 8 hours, your fingers are totally swollen up, and try to get into your notebook with the fingerprint scanner with that finger. That really don't work. And, well, I didn't want to do it to exploit the fingerprint scanners on the borders, because this would be illegal. But I noticed they had quite a problem reading my first finger with this fingerprint scanner. And they just give up after three tries. They just said, well, don't bother, just you put your finger there and don't care. And they just scanned the second one quite a short time. And I think, we are the hackers. We should know how to deal with the fingerprint scanners.
So can I expect a whole lot of Germans to be folding their arms all the way over to the United States this summer and causing problems?
Well, if you sit in a Boeing 767 airplane full with people, you don't have any choice than just sitting there this way, because of the way American big size seat neighbor and weight of about 180 kilos, which would be something about 340 kilograms, just don't leave you any other space.
Right. There are no large people from Bavaria who eat the sausage, drink the beer. No large people in Bavaria at all, right?
Yeah, sure, definitely. I just don't need to look downside. Okay. So we just want to say it's not a big problem coming over with a fingerprint scanner at the immigrations. Just remember all the time, we are the hackers. Not
exactly. We're the people that understand the technology. We're the people who have to voice our concerns about the technology and, you know, show people, demonstrate how it can be used for really, really bad things.
I have to say that these people really don't know how to work the technology. Last summer, I went to the What the Heck conference in Holland, and I flew back, actually, out of Germany. And they were checking my name on the do not fly, the all-feared American do not fly list. And I know for a fact now that I'm not on it because this guy who was German but was obviously trained by the U.S. government or whatever had this PDA that I was looking over his shoulder and typing my name into the do not fly list. And this guy clearly did not know how to even work the PDA. He was typing my first name and my last name, and he couldn't find me at all on the official passenger list, so he had to, you know, type me in. And these people don't know what they're doing.
They have the do not fly list on a PDA?
He went to a menu item that said, like, check lists.
Okay,
and
now,
he typed
now
my name
for the
in.
First time in my life, I want a PDA. I want that list.
I think he would have noticed if I had stolen it, but...
You cause a distraction. You say, hey, look at that, and then, you know, you walk away.
Yeah, but we have this kind of problem with German police, and I think you have it with American police. If you know how to work with computers, if you know how to work with electronics, do you go to the police? Or do you just take the better paid job? Usually the police is not that good paid. So I think it's even the same with the immigration service. But we wanted to talk about the Hope. So, give me a small introduction to the Hub. What do you want to have? What will you have?
We have a huge amount of space. We have a couple of really big conference rooms where we give all sorts of talks and panels on everything ranging from computers to phones to encryption to social engineering to anything that a hacker might be interested in. And there are so many things and so little time. We have 3 full days and nights to program these panels. We have other rooms, too, to have different panels and seminars. We have a big space downstairs for all sorts of computers and demonstrations and robots and segways, whatever we feel like bringing in there. It's really our imagination is the only limit because we have so much space to work with.
We will probably have a repeat of the ever-popular film festival. All sorts of hacker-related movies, either directly hacker-related, done by hackers or about hackers, or mainstream media attacking hackers in their own way. The infamous film of the same title, and there are other examples, which I won't name yet.
And we hope to do something with blinking lights this year.
I think also one of the things that was sort of implicit in what Emmanuel said about the space that we have, but I want to really stress it, is that our space, unlike... a lot of the European hacker camps, is in the middle of Midtown Manhattan, which is one of the most dense places with people in the world. And so it really gives us a chance to sort of engage with the population. Last time we had this artwork in our front window, which showed an astronaut on the moon with an upside-down American flag. This caused such a furor that we were required to remove it and sort of hide it upstairs where only our attendees could see it rather than the public. And it really is interesting to be able to see what other people who are not part of the hacker scene think of what we're doing.
Yeah, we're literally right on 7th Avenue on the street. So people are walking by all the time, and this is a chance for ordinary people walking down 7th Avenue to see a whole bunch of hackers doing something in a window.
Yeah, just let me just explain you as a foreigner. The Pennsylvania Hotel is directly opposite Madison Square Garden. You might have heard about that. Under Madison Square Garden is Pennsylvania Station. This is one of the biggest railway stations in New York, and all those, in German we call them Pendler, all the people, daylight day traveler, just get there every day. So there are really millions of people passing directly in front of the conference. This is not like, at a nearly mid of the city like in Germany, the Alexanderplatz. It's really the central of New York. It's much more central as, for example, the Alexanderplatz is. And the Pennsylvania Hotel, I think, has 18 stages. 18 floors?
Yes.
It actually has a few secret floors, but 18 official floors.
Okay. And as I understood that, the conference will be on the first two and the last two floors.
Well, actually, the last one floor. Anybody who ventures past that is doing it without permission.
Okay. So you will have the great view over Manhattan from the 18th floor. We will have the possibility of millions of people passing by in the morning directly in front of... something we would like to have blinking lights over here, but it might be a problem with that some people from blinking lights can't travel over, so we couldn't call it blinking lights. Some other people called it Enlight NYC already, and we will need to find a name for that. But we will have two large windows with something alike blinking lights, the mini blinking lights, for example, in a bigger size like 2 to 3 meters. I'd like to use metric sizes in this radio show here. And, well, if you just go out of the door, it's really in the center of Manhattan, in the absolute center, much more than the Alexanderplatz is in Berlin.
Yeah, it's a great way to see the city and a great way for the city to see you.
Yeah, I was going to say something about the fact that the central location gives you a lot of opportunities depending on what you're into for hacking. For example, it's a main subway station underneath. So if you're into magnetic stripes, you have a ready supply of New York City Metro cards to experiment on. Just pick them off the floor with all these commuters leaving. If you remember a classic cover of 2600 magazine from a couple of years ago, there are dozens, if not hundreds, of wireless networks within 2-3 blocks of the hotel. There are enough buildings with various types of security around there that you can wander in at your own risk and try to defeat or experiment or merely observe, which is what we would suggest. There are pay telephones beyond number and of many different companies. So if you're interested in experimenting with American telephones, pay for telephones, at your own risk, there's plenty of them around. Almost anything a hacker can think of can be found within a block or two.
And let's not forget all the touristic program. All the Europeans, I think, will come over for 1 week at minimum. Maybe some of them will go to the DEF CON after that, which is, we need to say that, 2 weeks after the HOPE. So this is really a nice journey for all the Europeans.
You'd need at least 2 weeks in New York to even start to get a taste of it.
Yeah, I just have been 5 weeks in New York. Well, 4.5. I'm stay for another half a week. But I have seen half of Central Park, a bit of Soho, Chinatown, and some little more. And that's basically, that was it. And there's much more to see. And
we should give the website for our conference, which is hope.net. It's a very memorable website. And if you go there, one of the things that would be really interesting is if folks who are listening to this program in Germany would submit talks. We want to hear it'll give you a chance to address an American audience, and we really want to hear what folks have to say.
And we're very open about the subject matter. If it's got anything to do with something that hackers would be interested in, we're considering it. All sorts of different topics, technical, non-technical, things having to do with computers or not computers. We have one panel that has to do with exploring the underground of a city, you know, urban exploration. That's hacking, too. All sorts of things, radio, technology of all sorts that people are interested in. So it all applies.
And also on our website, we have the wiki where people can edit content. And I believe it's the case that our wiki has more content in the German language than the German CCC Congress wiki. So that is something that we're proud of. We also have pages in Russian and Polish, and if people speak more languages, we're open to that. But the talks, I think, should be in English.
I hope that means a lot of Germans and Russians and Poles are going to come.
I hope so.
I hope so, too. I hope we get some people to the HOPE from Germany. So, what else to say?
Well, gosh, well, here you are in New York for the last few days. You're going to be leaving here soon. This is your first time in New York?
Yeah, this was my first time in New York.
Okay, so it wasn't frightening? It wasn't something that people should be afraid of?
No, it really wasn't frightening. It was a bit funny, especially at the immigration office when you come into the country, because this is a bit strange. I was warned not to, I would say play with them or making jokes at them, and I really like it to make jokes with policemen, and all the Americans here were really afraid that in the first days when I saw a police car with open windows parking at the side, some policemen sitting in there eating their muffins or something, first thing, just went over there and played the German tourist thing. This was really funny, I need to say. I was a bit scared how scared the Americans were when I did this.
Wow, I would like to have seen that. It ended well, I take it.
It all ended well. It's so easy if you're over here and the policeman approaches you just thinking you did something wrong, like smoking a too big cigarette or something else. You can, in 99% of the cases, just try to get out with this
magic words are German tourist. Do you speak English? Do you speak German? No.
Oh, I have to try that. I could really use a tip like that.
We have to get the accent down first, and that might be difficult. But a lot of the officials here do take their jobs a little bit too seriously, which may not be the case in Europe, although I didn't get to interact with too many over there.
That's because they're so much harder to find.
Well, yeah, that's true. You'll see so many more cops on the street. You know, during times of so-called high security, you'll even see officers in full military gear with automatic machine guns and stuff that you probably wouldn't see very commonly in a lot of European cities. But it's something to experience. And if not anything else, let it serve as a warning to not let this happen, you know.
Yes, learn from our mistakes. And the best way to do that is to see our mistakes in person.
Yeah, I really recommend that. And I really need to say it's really true. If you come over here and you're not used to the level of police you see over here in Germany, you usually see one or two policemen somewhere, but you rarely see, for example, if you go into Central Park somewhere in the middle, one a bit closer to the police station, you see much more policemen than visitors in Central Park. And it's really something different for a German than for an American, because you see so many policemen and they look so unfriendly, and you sit on a bank with your feet upside on the bank and they just come up to you with a really angry face and look at where you take your feet down, and you just say, sorry, I'm a German tourist. What do I have to do? And you better do not speak English so good then. And
I have to try this.
Yeah, they turn over friendly immediately. I got a picture with somebody who just came up to me and wanted to tell me anything I did wrong. And it ended up with taking photos of the policeman and smiling to each other. And, oh, I really need to go to Germany. I heard it's a really nice place, really calm, really friendly. And unbelievable how fast the policeman can change.
Well, we don't want to give everyone who's listening the idea that New York is an unfriendly, hostile, dark, dank, depressing city. It still is what it was, a city of great restaurants, great cultural institutions, museums, plays, music, everything you could want in any city you can imagine. And although I'm biased, perhaps even more. So, you know, you can still get plenty of enjoyment out of New York. You just have to recognize that, you know, there are things of one sort and things of another sort.
I find New York to be one of the friendliest cities in the world. If you're lost, people will always help you. And like you said, you can even get the cops to get out of cop mode and turn into human beings again. I have the only smart car in New York City. You see those in Germany all the time, but they don't have them here. And whenever I drive it around, cops start talking to me as if I was, you know, someone that they could be friendly with, as opposed to the way they usually talk to me. And it's just weird to see how a certain thing, in your case being a German tourist, in my case driving a weird car, can somehow break down the barriers. And I think we need more of that.
Yeah, definitely. And I even don't want to give the impression that there are only cops over here in America. I need to say I haven't had really negative voice all the time all I've been here. And even the immigration officers who tried to get my fingerprints didn't turn unfriendly cop mode, as you said. They keep friendly all the time. And especially when you come over here, the only thing what is really surprising, and you don't really like it on the first two days, America is full, well, New York in especial, is full of Germans.
Yes.
Unbelievable. We had been up to the Empire State Building, and I took some nice pictures where on my website, and I found 26 Germans on the Empire State Building, and there were about 40 people up there.
Well, I was traveling with some friends of mine last summer all around the world, and at one point we were in Mongolia, and my friends were from Holland. And wouldn't you know, they just happened to meet more people from Holland in Mongolia. And they were so upset because they wanted to meet Mongolians and talk to people from that part of the world. And who did they run into but more tourists just like them from their country? So, yeah, I can understand that. I feel the same way when I see Americans in other countries.
If you come to the Hope Conference and ask really nicely, maybe we'll tell you where the tourists don't go.
Yes, I think you should. This should be a problem. The Americans from the hacker scene I met over here, I think I have had a nice day for that, and met some nice people over here at the Hope Volunteers meeting. and at the parties. I really can say the Americans are really very friendly, and they took me to some very nice places where really hard to find in Europe, I think.
And I think that's one of the points of the conferences that really has to be stressed, because I had the same experience over in Europe when I went to the conference in Holland and the conference in Berlin. You know, it was really great to make friends there and meet people who can tell you, okay, well, if you really want to experience what life is like in this city, you know, go here and come with us to these places and, you know, kind of avoid the tourist traps. And, you know, you can save money that way as well and make your trip overall cheaper and, of course, end up with a lot of good friends afterwards. So it's definitely one of the positive points of meeting at a place like this as opposed to just, you know, planning your own trip to the city.
Yeah. Okay, then I think we will give back and come back later for a short talk after that. And meanwhile, I think the crew in the Sea Raider studio, which is there all the time, sitting back, leaning back, drinking hopefully some beer, nice drinks, and listening to other music and talking about what they should do all the time. We will be back soon and hope to hear from you. Hope to see you on Hope.
Hope.
Ja, und jetzt geht's hier weiter mit gleich mit bisschen Musik aus dem Zerada-Studio bei Radio Darmstadt. Und weil ja im Irk-Channel auch schon der Hinweis kam, dass es sich nicht um Liquid Drum and Bass handelt, das ist, denke ich, richtig. Es ist das Label Tilt Recordings, zu dem man übrigens auf der Webseite www.tilt-recordings.com Tilt, T-I-L-T, mehr erfährt. Das ist ein Label, das sich eher auf technoiden Drum and Bass so ein bisschen verlagert hat, sage ich jetzt mal. Es gibt aber, also sie decken halt viele Spielrichtungen ab mit dem, was sie rausbringen, und es sind halt auch viele Producer, die einfach da ihre Tricks dann mal zur Verfügung stellen für die 320er MP3s. Was noch erwähnenswert wäre und was ich das Wichtigste an diesem Label finde, ist eigentlich, dass sowohl die Platten als auch die MP3s unter der Creative Commons Lizenz veröffentlicht werden, die ja doch noch nicht so weit verbreitet ist. Und es geht jetzt weiter mit noch im einfacheren Stück, sage ich jetzt mal, also einem nicht so harten Stück von einem Darmstädter Produzenten, Budoka. Und ja, wie lange spielen wir jetzt Musik?
Mal schauen.
Also wir spielen jetzt erstmal ein bisschen Musik und in 10 Minuten oder so geht's weiter.
I don't know.
Minuten zurück und wir haben es hingekriegt. Wir haben eine Live-Schalte mit New York gerade und da sitzt McFly in dem Hacker Halfway House mit nicht alleine, sogar mit anderen amerikanischen Nerds. So that's why we start talk English better right now. Hi McFly, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you perfectly.
Okay, so why don't you tell us a little bit about your experiences in New York with the American Nerds? You are there since 4 weeks, I guess, right now?
A bit more, yes, 4 weeks and some days. 4 weeks and 3 days.
So, how is it in New York?
Well, I think before I've been one of those people who really didn't like America that much. But I decided to come over here and give it a try, and well, I need to say I'll come back for sure. New York is really interesting. You can stay in New York, see new things every day for 4 weeks and more without any repetition. You can, there are very many interesting things that every tourist has to go. You have to see Times Square, you have to see up to Empire State Building, and from Empire State Building there can you can see the rest.
And okay, if you do these tourist things, you will run into Googles of German tourists.
Yeah, that was what, really. That's what we heard every, about. You already.
Yeah, every single place we went, there were German speakers everywhere.
It's always a bit funny because we met a girl standing on the side of the road, looking at her map, and she then we stood there for 2 minutes, and then she came up. Well, I have a question. I want to go to the Metropolitan Museum of Arts. And I thought, where are you from? And it's Germany. And he's okay, well, let's speak German then. And you really run in Germans everywhere. I think on the Empire State Building there have been more Germans than other languages up there. It was really funny. Well, to the rest, there are very many small places where we have been. I've been shown some bars and some pubs and some coffee shops, which is really a shop where you can get coffee and not the European meaning. And I've had a circle tour, so with a boat, one round Manhattan. You start in the east, go down... Big river, what were they called?
Went down the Hudson River and then
Hudson.
Over to the East River and then all the way around up to the Bronx. And
Statue of Liberty.
Back down.
Then you drive through between Harlem and Bronx and back down the Hudson River down. And this was really funny because it was the only day I here in New York where it was raining.
Okay. Have good luck.
Good. Very good luck.
Yeah, but it was funny.
How?
The boat had a...
How is it about interesting things for nerds in New York? How is the infrastructure of internet, for example, or are there any interesting places, especially for nerds and computer-interested people?
Well, I visited some internet exchanges with miles, and I've seen the house where all the cables are coming out of the ocean, where all our packages, even at the moment, are going through. I have been at a Hope Volunteers meeting some very interesting person there who spend all their time at the moment preparing the Hope conference.
And how about the infrastructure?
Hope twice. I think this is the infrastructure.
Yes.
What infrastructure?
Of internet, for example. How fast are you at where you stay, McFly?
The Hacker Halfway House has a T1, which is 1.5 megabit both direction, and they pay about $600 a month.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, the interesting thing here about the internet is that upstream costs almost 10 times as much as downstream. So we're in a special location where we're sort of far away from a telco, which means that we have to get expensive internet. We can't get your average flat rate DSL that almost everyone else has. Even those customers who are getting 7 megabits down are still only getting 768 up which is pretty interesting. I think that's not the same here and there.
And now in Germany, we also have just that the upload is very little. For example, I've got 6 Mbits down, but only 600 kilobytes up. So I think this is very, very like here also.
Yeah, that's very similar. So.
Well, in Germany, you can easily get something we call upload doubling, and this is not really common here.
Hmm. Yeah, we have different services available to us, though, on our internet also, right? You had a discussion with Miles about that.
Yes, the internet from Germany and the internet from America is different. You can try that with two browsers, one set to German, DE, and one set to US, so American setting, and you will get, especially interesting at Google Pics and Google Videos, you'll get different answers. For example, in the German video selection, there are more videos available from Iraq, which are simply not available in America. Really true.
You should try the Chinese Google then.
Actually, here in the halfway house, there are some prints out from Google of America and Google of China from the Tiananmenplatz, also auf Deutsch Platz des himmlischen Friedens. Mm-hmm. Ich denke, das hat der einen oder anderen schon was gesagt. And the American version is full of tanks and people get shot, and the Chinese work things is full of nice tourist pictures where you want to travel. So internet is localized already, you notice yeah. that.
There is always more control coming into the internet. But there are still some countries where there's almost no control or very little. Also some special servers in some countries. So, okay, I would say so far right now, let's make a little break and listen some music. And we'll come back to you in some minutes.
Hope to hear so. Hope to hear from you.
Okay.
Hey. Beautiful.
And who is it on the other side?
So this is Benign Punk from the Hacker Halfway House, live, coming to you from NYC. We're going to talk to you a little bit about the American hacker scene and the New York hacker scene. I'm here with my roommate, Villain.
Hi.
Hi.
So the name that most of you probably associate with the American hacker scene is 2600, but and that's well and good, because 2600 is probably our oldest and most national institution here. But there's other things that go on in the community here, and these are even maybe more prevalent at this point. And these things are things like your CCC Congress. We have many, many, many events and cons that happen throughout the year. I could probably name 12 that happen in continental U.S. And you happen to be talking to us on a very special day, because we have a whole bunch of people here, and we are going this evening to Cleveland for one of these events called Nauticon. So we're gonna be having a panel at HOPE, the conference that happens in New York this summer, about whether or not the 2600 meetings are working. And I think this is going to be a very interesting panel. So if you talk to some people in the U.S., you're going to hear mixed views about how people feel about 2600. So how do you feel about 2600, Villain?
Oh. Are we live? Is this recorded?
You're live on.
This is recording.
It's a well-organized and established organization for a while. And there's a lot of people that attend it, and there's a lot of T-shirts made for 2600. I think there's more than one facet to the American hacker scene, and maybe 2600 isn't representing all of it. Not to say it's representing a negative facet, but that's what I think about 2600.
In Europe, 2600 is known more as a magazine than a club of people meeting, like CCC here. How is the exactly relation between the magazine and all the cons and the meetings and all the organization?
Well, I think that your perception is more correct than our perception, perhaps. I think a lot of the people here who attend the meetings don't read the magazine anymore. Probably a lot of them came to the scene in the first place by reading it, but I don't know that a man would like to hear me say this, but we at the Hacker Halfway House have not had a subscription to the magazine for, like, maybe the last, actually, since we've been here, for 3.5 years. So, not to say that 2600 is nothing. Almost all of us met through 2600 in one way or another. I came and became involved with the scene initially by starting a 2600 meeting with a friend of mine in Colorado. And I think that it's very good for networking, although it is not nearly it doesn't provide the infrastructure that the CCC does. The meetings are held once a month in a public space, which means that there's not really time for anything but networking. There's a lot of people that have to arrange their projects on their own time, instead of in a public space. So one of the projects that a lot of people organize is these cons, which is why we have so many different events. And each of these events is held by an individual person or organization. None of these cons really have anything to do with one another. So that's basically the infrastructure that we have here. We have a bunch of independent events and a very loose, open meeting that happens once a month in areas, which is in stark contrast to what you have at the CCC, I believe.
I have seen that there are also meetings outside of the U.S., even in Europe, for example, in Poland or Russia or all different countries. Do you have are you in contact with those meetings?
Absolutely not. In fact, most of the meetings are not even in contact with each other. So in Colorado, we had a meeting in Denver, and there was another meeting in Colorado Springs, which is maybe 2 hours apart by car, and there was not communication between the two groups. I tried to go to a meeting in London once, but I missed it because they had a curfew after the London subway bombings. So I've never been to a 2600 meeting outside of the U.S. so I can't really speak about that.
I have to say at this moment that 2 hours by car in the U.S., it's really close.
Yes, very close, very, very close. The place that we're going, we consider very close, and we're close enough to drive, and it's a 9-hour drive for us, and it's not even close to halfway across the country.
Yeah, the distances are different in America and in Europe.
we actually have a state that's as large as Germany.
What should I say right now?
My excuse is that this is the reason that we don't have as good a national rail system as you.
Yeah, that's true. How about the cons? Are the cons different? For example, can you say that the hope is especially for people who are interested in some subject, or are they all for computer interested people, not only for a special subject?
The cons are great because each one has their own personality, and I think that you'll find that if you come and visit, which you should, that Hope is a very different conference than, for example, DEF CON, and DEF CON is a very different conference than Nauticon. Hope has about 3,000 people, and the con that we're going to tonight, Nauticon, has about 300, so you can see there that that's a pretty stark difference. Hope seems to focus on more cultural issues. They talk a lot about politics. They come from the old phone freakers. They're the people who started the magazine and then who started the Hope conferences. So some of the things that they talk about are more like that. I think that you're going to find more journalists and activists at Hope than you'll find at any other conference. However, if you go to DEF CON, you're going to find all kinds of competitions going on, like the Wi-Fi shootout, the World Wide War Drive. And you're going to find more federal agents than at any other con, for example. So it's really cool to get to go to all of these because they're all related to hacking, they're all related to computer security and phones and lockpicking and all of the stuff that everybody's interested in. They all have their own unique character.
Okay, so thank you so far. And we'll make a little break right now and listen a little bit music and come back to you soon.
Super!
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Hello, okay. New York.
Hello.
Hello, Darmstadt.
So, is there anything more you would like to tell us about 2600?
I think people, it might be an invalid comparison. When people look at CCC and its organization, what it's done, and they look over to America and they look at 2600 and they say, okay, what are the similarities, what are the differences? And I'm not really sure if that's a valid comparison, because it seems that, from what I understand, the CCC is definitely more of a centralized, and it's an actual organization, whereas 2600 is kind of like a group of common held ideas. And yes, there's a magazine, and yes, there are meetings, but like what Benign says is they're not totally like connected. And obviously, we're not saying this is a good thing, but it's kind of like a bottom up approach, whereas CCC might be like top down. Where there's, you know, people can look at it and see what it's done and see places where they can fit in a lot more easier than a more loose organization, if you want to call it 2600 organization, which might not be, you know, the right thing to say. So,
I was reading that every meeting from 2600 can, after a time it exists, have some space in the 2600 magazine. They can write some stuff there.
Well, any person anywhere can submit an article to be published in 2600. So if you want to publish anything in 2600, you just go to their website and find the email address and send it over an article. And most likely, if it's any good, it will be published.
They do have a list of the meetings as well, at least the public ones. But I believe the criteria is they have to meet on the first Friday of the month at a certain time, for the most part.
In a public place. And any meeting that happens in the United States that does not meet those requirements is not advertised in the magazine, which has led to some problems with some people.
How about American media? I mean, here the CCC has some interest to the media, where they try to get some voice and that people can hear to what they're saying, that they have the possibilities. And how is about 2600? Is the magazine the only way to talk to a big public, or the other medias are also taking care of what's going on and what you're doing?
I think that if you wanted to name the biggest difference between American hacker culture and German or European hacker culture, you've hit it right on the nose. Public image is our biggest problem, I think, because we get people other than the kind of people who want to do the same stuff that we want to do into the scene. And basically, if you ask the American media what is a hacker, they're going to tell you a criminal. Immediately,
or a terrorist.
Or a terrorist. Yeah, yeah. So we have a lot of different challenges to face with the media and with the politics and with everything else than you do, just because of that, because of our public image.
Which is kind of it's unfortunate, and not just the fact that they're vilifying us, not to be have a pun, but the problem is that, for instance, if the hacker scene is perceived as this group of, even if they're not criminals, right, but sort of like, miscreants and whatnot, or younger children kind of like vandalizing things, that the unfortunate thing is that, whereas in Germany there might be older people who have interest in technology and are capable and they want to get involved in stuff, if that same person is in America, they're going to think that, I don't really want to get involved with this because I have a family and, I'm a responsible person and I don't want to associate with that, those type of people. So I think it's kind of like it's a double problem, I guess, sir.
So it's a hard life for hackers in America.
Oh, yes. It's not so bad. being part of the underground is sort of romantic. So
yes, that's.
But we do, before we go, want to tell you about Hope this summer.
Oh yes.
So let's just let's talk about that for a minute. Hope is a conference where you get together hackers and activists and artists and journalists and try to improve our public image in any way that we can. It happens at the Hotel Pennsylvania in New York City in Manhattan, July 21st through 23rd. And if you plan ahead, you can get tickets from Germany at various points, Frankfurt and Berlin, for about 400 euros. So I think that's a pretty fair price if you want to come visit. And if you happen to have the time off, a mere 2 weeks later is DEF CON in Las Vegas. So if you can manage to come to both Hope and DEF CON, you will see the East Coast and West Coast, if you will, of the American hacker scene. They're very drastically different cons, both representing a faction of the hacker population, and they're both a very good time. And by the way, Hope only happens every 2 years, so if you don't come this time, you're going to have to wait until 2008 to come again.
Yeah, and Hope is a really, really good time. That was my favorite HackerCon that I've been to. That's where I first met Benign, and I came to the Hacker Halfway House then for a party, and then now I live here, so I can't guarantee that for all the Germans coming over, but miracles can happen. Hope isn't all. We shouldn't say it's all like activism and politics and this and that. There definitely is some technical stuff. There's a lot of really smart, friendly people that you can meet. I think that's one of the benefits of probably the biggest benefit to me was meeting all these people and networking with them. I wouldn't say all of the American hackers are down and sad about things, so you can talk to them about that. And, the tool guys will be there for lockpicking, I believe, and hopefully we'll have some, or more than a few, people from Germany. So
absolutely. We're going to have a whole lot of interesting events this year that we haven't had in the past, including a CTF game, which is attempting to incorporate not just your average server hacking, but also lockpicking, physical security, and robots into the contest. So that could be very interesting. We're working on getting some interesting machines of different types to have at the place for people to take apart. We're looking into having people be able to ride on Segways in the vast space that we have. Of course, we'll have a hack center type thing, but we want to have as many people from different places to come and represent. We'll have other contests and projects from all over the country and hopefully all over the world. So do your part. Come to Hope. Don't fail.
Don't fail.
Yeah, we will try, and we also make good information about it, so maybe some people from here will decide to come to Hope.
Very good. And I have to say, the more of you who come out here and meet all of us friendly Americans, the more of us are going to come over and enjoy the CCC and come to the Congress, and hopefully we can really have a new international bridge. Yeah. In the next coming years.
Yeah, this has started right now, I would say. By the way, in our ESC channel to this show, the people very like your voice.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
what about my voice? What's up with that?
No jealous. Comments about your voice.
Well, all right.
So thank you for this information and for your time.
Absolutely. Thanks very much.
We will hope to see you at the conferences in USA, or maybe you come also over to Germany for some
I'm hoping to come in September
here.
To Darmstadt.
To Mitter and Main Chaos Days. Yes.
Absolutely.
A great event. So thank you again.
Awesome. And thanks.
Our show is almost over. And right
thanks
now
for having me.
Right now we will listen one track from Cheney. And maybe we can repeat this. Maybe we can do this stuff often that we talk between America
sure.
and Germany.
We'd
love
that.
Make the show together. So thank you very much again.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ja, und das war's auch schon fast. Heute mit Cerada. Mit einer Live-Schaltung nach USA. Oh mein Gott, mein Englisch ist so schlecht.
Finde ich jetzt gar nicht, das war, ging eigentlich. Und wir hören jetzt im Hintergrund, hören wir jetzt noch einen Titel von vom Label Tilt Recordings. Und zwar ist das die Tilt 003 mit dem Titel Schrinz. Also gerade frisch erschienen. Ich glaube, die ist seit letzter Woche erst in den Läden draußen. Die Promo gab es seit Februar oder so.
Ja, alles klar. Dann würde ich sagen, es verabschieden sich aus dem Cerada-Studio der Maddock,
Janie
und der DJ Spock.
Und Kurtmonk hat uns leider schon früher verlassen. Und was hören wir jetzt noch?
Und jetzt hören wir noch einen kleinen Mitschnitt, das uns der Elmar zugesendet hat. Ich glaube, das ist nochmal Werbung für die Hope.
Zum Beispiel nach New York fahren sollte.
Oh, but the reason why you should come to the Sixth Hope it's because it's happening in New York, which is an international crosswalk, or because you can. And I'll send even a message to the Italian hacker community, or maybe because it's 19.
Well, if you're asking me why people should come to Hope, it's quite simple. Life's full of exploration, challenges, adventure, learning, meeting people, and just seeing the world. And you could do all of that just by coming to Hope in July.
And it's also a great way to discover new projects, see demonstrations hands-on, and work on them, and, you know, discuss new ideas with new people.
should come to Hope because Midtown is foreign to New Yorkers also, and it's very weird.
And you should come because I need to practice my German and my French.
And I think you should come because comparing and learning from each other is always a good thing to from different countries. And so, and there, we wish you a nice evening. Hope to hear you again next month on C-Rodder, and we will do this next week. We'll do this either in German or in Netherlands, so Dutch. So hope to hear from you soon, and goodbye.
Starts. Ra-da-da-da-da-da.
Darmstadt aktuell, die wöchentliche Hörzeitung, herausgegeben vom Magistrat der Stadt Darmstadt.